Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of The Non-Pro Show. We're taking a little bit of a turn from our new format to jump back to the old days of the line cutters. I'm actually here with none other than Matt and Al. Hi, Matt. Hi, Al. How you guys doing?
Woo!
Hello. Yeah, good to be back here. It's been a while since we've all been together doing stuff. So this is kind of exciting.
It feels incredibly nostalgic. I'm like, you know, my heart has grown three sizes. I don't know why I'm the Grinch, but you know, you get the idea.
Well, it's a holiday season, so I guess it's appropriate, I guess. Shrug.
For those of you who don't know or don't recognize my voice, I'm also James of Non-Pro. We're here to talk about, you know, one of the line cutters' favorite old topics, which is none other than video games. But before we dive into it, we actually have a guest joining us, a good friend of mine, friend of the show, Kareem. Kareem, are you there?
I'm here.
Hey, Kareem, it's really glad to have you on board.
I'm glad to be here. Thanks for including me. Really excited.
Awesome. So I wanted to start out our conversation today before we get into talking about the consoles, this generation of gaming as we go into the Christmas season, you know, as you're thinking about making your purchases. I kind of wanted to update everybody on where we are right now with gaming in our lives. You know, our relationship with gaming has obviously changed as we've aged, you know, and I think that's kind of like going to inform our perspectives as we go forward. You know, Matt, I'd love to start with you if you'd take us off.
Sure. Gosh, I kind of have to think about this. That's kind of tough. I mean,
deep question, right?
It is a deep question. It's as much as I can. Like, I've always, I mean, if anyone's listened to Non-Pro Line Cutters for a long time, like, everyone knows that I'm more falling the more hardcore end of the gaming spectrum. And I've tried to keep that up, but obviously, as you said, time has moved on. Like, I've gotten a bunch more stuff to take care of, and I haven't been able to game as much as I want. But I mean, I'd say, considering with like COVID going on and that kind of thing, like, I have been gaming a lot more than I maybe would have not like if like normally. So like I've kind of like, I'd say I put myself kind of like more in like the hardcore area of gaming, where I'm playing a lot. I usually at evenings when I come home from work, I like to play a game. Weekends, I like to play games like after I get all my chores done, and I try to commit myself to when I play. So I like to go for like longer sessions.
You know, you are kind of recognized on Non-Pro as the resident gamer. You know, you host our game streams every Fridays. You're posting the fan club all about gaming. You know, we definitely look to you as the gaming professional in the group. But, you know, to toss it over to Al, I think, Al, you have one of the most actual professional relationships with gaming right here. You know, you have your store, your shop. You know, talk a little bit about where you're at with gaming these days.
Gaming's changed dramatically over the years for a myriad of reasons, one of which being absolutely the business. When I eventually got into buying and selling games and going to conventions and whatnot, my relationship utterly changed from being this very hardcore collector to, and I still am that collector. I still do collect a lot of video game stuff and the memorabilia, but at the same time, it has changed in the idea that I don't seek out games anymore. Most of the time, my collection will grow when someone sells something into the store. And that sort of began to infect most aspects of gaming for me. I don't keep up much with current gen stuff, because eventually it's all going to be worth $5 and someone's going to want to sell it to me. So I just sort of have this wait and see approach. Like, that's where I got my PS4. Someone just traded it in because they didn't want it anymore. So, and I don't go shopping for games anymore. I don't buy them off the shelves unless I really, really want them, or I think that the price for them is just going to go up, or for whatever reason, I really want a special edition, which is very rare. We're talking, I went from buying like 10, 20 games a year to like maybe picking up one at retail, if that, one a year. But yeah, it's dramatically changed. And like, not so much that I didn't choose to become like a retro game aficionado, but by the nature of how I play games now, it's sort of just become that by default. I know so much about what's come before, and when I was really into things, I kept up with so much stuff and was informed, even on games I didn't play. I still was very much in the know about all this information that I could be such a savvy buyer. Now it's so much more the, well, I want to see things in retrospect, and I want to look at things when we're like 10 years down the line. Like just now, I'm looking at games that I want for my PS4, and I'm putting together a list of games that I eventually want to get and like put into my collection. I don't have an Xbox One yet, but I'm hoping I get one eventually, because I do have a few games that I've just kept around for myself. But that's sort of how it is. It's like I collect in retrospect as opposed to keeping up with what's new and what's happening right now. So this is a very different change of pace for me.
I feel like you just jumped in with this such a cynical approach. He's like, yeah, all that stuff you just spent a lot of money on, people, it'll all be worth $5 one day, and then it'll be mine.
I mean, I hate to say it, but that's 9 times out of 10 the truth.
Kareem, you are a newcomer here to the Line Cutters. We have really no experience with your history of gaming. Maybe give us a little more expansive look at your relationship to gaming in the past and where you are right now.
Sure. So I think it's probably fair to say I probably fall in line on the hardcore side. I mean, I think my first console was an Atari, and I think I've had every single major console since then. So I've been playing games for a long time. I don't really dive into the whole console war debate. I don't really pick a side. I think I probably lean a little bit more towards the Sony side. There's a lot of nostalgia there for me with some of the games. My favorite game of all time is Resident Evil. And I've had every single one that comes out, even Resident Evil 6, which was horrible, but I played it and had a smile on my face nonetheless, because I love it. Right now, my relationship with gaming is a little complicated because I have a 6-year-old daughter who, though she's very, very young, had very little interest in video games until she turned 5. And rest assured, my Nintendo Switch became hers at that point. And putting in serious gaming hours on Mario Kart, like even competing with me, like actually winning races that I was trying to win. I thought, you know, that's fine. Kids like Nintendo. That seems to be like the right way to go. So I eventually got her a Nintendo Switch Lite, which was awesome. She got it for last Christmas, opened it up, super excited, played it for about 10 minutes and was like, I like your Nintendo Switch better. So that's how I'm going to roll. And I was like, well, there's another Switch in the house, so it doesn't matter, right? I like playing portable anyway, so it didn't make a big deal to me. But recently, with the launch of the next-gen consoles, and mind you, I've never been a launch day one purchaser of the, I guess now it's a current gen, but I've never gotten a new console on day one. And this year I said, you know what, I'm going to go for the pre-orders. I'm going to try to get it. Something in me just said it's going to be super hard to get if you don't get it with a pre-order. So I was lucky enough that I was able to secure me a PlayStation 5 and an Xbox Series S. They arrived here last week, no issues. Super excited. I go through the unboxing, the whole shebang, playing a little song in my head as I open the boxes. It was, you know, I tear apart my my media center to do the whole recabling, so it's nice, pretty, everything. I can say that since my PlayStation 5 arrived last week, my hands have touched the controller a total of maybe 4 times, equaling maybe about, call it, 6 hours of gaming, maybe 8. My daughter, on the other hand, her hands have been on the controller every single day for 5 to 6 hours a day.
Wow.
feel like I'm hearing my future here.
And it's surprising to me because she's 6 years old, right? PS5 is pretty, you know, I don't want to call it like an adult console, but like the games, when you think about some of the games that are on there, God of War, Horizon Zero Dawn, you know, The Last of Us, these are serious games that make its way on there. And, you know, they have some kid-friendly games, but never in a million years did I think my daughter would want to play that. She's more familiar with the haptic feedback and the features of the controllers than I am, because she's gone through everything in there.
Wow. Like,
she's got 60% of the trophies in Astro's Playroom, right?
Wow. Like,
she's like seriously gaming on this. She, like, for me to tell her she can't play the PS5 is like, who are you kidding? Right? I'm going to play that thing. I don't care.
It sounds like we have the wrong person on the show, Kareem. I don't want to lie to you.
I mean, I've snuck in some hours, and where I probably I can those 6 to 8 hours come into play is that I've actually focused them on just PS5 games, so I can actually have something to say about the features related to the console, and I haven't done too much backwards compatibility. I've tried it just to see what it feels like. But yeah, the Xbox Series S, she's like, sure, go play that thing. I have no time for that. I've got a 1X in my bedroom. I'm good with that. But when it's PS5 time, go away. My daughter's like, I'm here to play. It's time for real gaming when I show up.
That's amazing. Thankfully, my son is not quite gaming age yet, but now I feel like I'm looking into the window of my future. I'll just finish this off really quickly before we move on to the meat. You know, my experience with gaming had like really fallen off quite a bit. You know, it's hard with work, being an adult. You know, I have a very busy job that keeps me traveling and on the road, you know, and my wife and I share the Switch, so I can't like just take it on every trip I go on. But then the pandemic hit, and I, for a good portion of time, found myself without a job, without work, and I had a lot of free time on my hands, and it was just, it felt so natural to slide back into gaming. You know, I powered through a ton of the Kingdom Hearts games I'd missed. Matt, you and I talked about it, but, you know, I dove into The Last of Us 2.
Yep.
You know, I've been playing Persona 5. You know, I really managed to get a ton of games in, and it was like, you know, it was kind of like returning home after a long time. You know, and unfortunately, now that I'm back to work, I have a little less time. But, you know, it was neat, the feeling of kind of like riding a bike. Like it doesn't feel like it leaves you, you know, even though you spend some time away, which is something I was pleasantly surprised about. So, yeah, I think we all come from very unique and interesting perspectives in gaming. So let's get into the meat of it. So we're going to talk initially about all of the consoles that are kind of available for you in this holiday season. And we're going to look at them in a couple of different ways. We're going to look at hardware features and compatibility, right? What's sort of the stuff that the consoles are toting these days? I don't think any of us are like super hardware junkies, but there's certainly things to talk about there. We definitely want to talk about games and game variety, right? Games are obviously the heart of consoles. You know, console can do all the things it wants, but if it doesn't have any good games on it, there's no fun to be had. Cost is obviously a big factor, right? What did these consoles cost and what are you going to be able to get them for? And then none other than kind of our general feelings about it and what we think. I think we should start off with an old favorite. You know, and I think I'm going to toss it off to Al to kind of get us going. But sure. Let's start talking about the Nintendo Switch, right? It's the one that's been out the longest. It's debated whether it's even a part of this generation, you know, but there are two versions of it available right now for you to purchase, you know, and it could be the console for you. So take us away, Al.
I mean, this is very odd that you should ask me about the Switch, because oddly enough, this morning, my mother went online to Target to go purchase two Switches. Well, actually, she purchased one. My sister purchased another one, so that my sister could have a Switch for both of her kids. Like, so they have an individual Switch between them. They didn't have to share. And I went to go pick these up at like at Target. And I think the idea is that, or at least in my sister's brain, was that this is going to be like a handheld system because you can use it as a handheld, even if you can plug it in and like use it as a console. They're going to want to take this on the road, and like, I'm not dealing with them sharing this thing or anything that they're going to be doing. And they're moving like in a month or less. So having like this entertainment box, they could just hand the kids in the back seat of a car and just tell them, you know, hey, veg out for a while and don't think about where we're going, how long the trip to North Carolina is. So I think it's just like, that's us. I think it's a lot of consumers' viewpoint of it is that it isn't just this thing that you plug into your house as an entertainment system, as many consoles were before. It's also your handheld. And while we may think it's nuts to buy an individual console for your kids, you certainly wouldn't buy, like, well, I guess you would. I'm being a bit classist here right now. I'm very sorry. But I guess you could, I could see why you would buy a Game Boy for, like, each individual child. You wouldn't buy Nintendo for each child. But I could see getting a Game Boy or a DS for each kid. And, like, because that would be a nightmare to share. Between the two children. Like, that's just kind of a little bit much. And, you know, maybe they share games, possibly. They don't have to. But, like, I think that's what a lot of consumers look at it as, and why it might just sell more and is the more popular one, is because it has that, like, well, I can just take this on the go. Or I could just play this in another room in the house, or just because we're dealing with pandemic season, just going outside of my house and being outside for an extended period of time, being in the sun, is like a benefit in and of itself. So I think there's just a lot there that the normal everyday consumer, the quote unquote casual gamer, even though I hate that term, finds and is involved in with the Switch.
Well, so I'm going to toss this over to you, Kareem. You're someone who owns two Switches. Let's talk about cost. Obviously, the Nintendo Switch, is priced at a point where that makes sense, right?
Yeah. So the Nintendo Switch was, I guess, in the last gen consoles that came out. The Nintendo Switch was the last item that I purchased, and I think I really got it because Pokemon Let's Go was coming out, and I was super nostalgic about playing something that reminded me of Pokemon Red and Blue. So I was super excited to play those. At the time, my daughter wasn't really into video games too much, but it certainly became a necessity to have two Switches. It's kind of like what Al said. It became a little bit, it's like the idea of my daughter playing what she wants and me having to wait, because that's how it works, right? You kids get to do everything first and for however long they want, and you just have to accept it. So the thought of that and like having to wait to play some Pokemon just wasn't going to work for me. So, I got the Nintendo Switch Lite thinking that, you know, she'd enjoy that and, you know, she can go to her room, play it. She doesn't have to play it on the TV. Cause even when she was playing the Switch at the time, she didn't really want to play it on the TV. She wanted to hold it in her hands. But for whatever reason, I guess the slight screen size difference, my daughter ended up liking the original Nintendo Switch, and she was like, yeah, you can go play with that Nintendo Switch Lite all you want. I'm going to play with the Nintendo Switch and, you know, enjoy that. So having two definitely makes sense. It makes life a lot easier. It's extremely portable and fun. I think the Nintendo Switch, especially when there's kids involved, it's the perfect console to have in the house. I think it's just a very, very fun gaming console.
Let me jump us kind of into hardware, right? So, you know, we talk about the cost and about having two different types of Switches, right? That's kind of what's nice here. So you've got two distinct hardware sets for the Switch. You have the all portable hardware set, which is this sort of smaller, kind of a little more rugged, you know, more for kids, $200 Switch that's essentially like a full replacement for Nintendo's mobile line. And then you've got the $300, you know, full Switch. This is with the detachable Joy-Cons and, you know, all of the all of that cool Switch functionality, you know, that Nintendo advertised when they brought out the Switch, and it's, you know, you plop it in the dock, see it on the TV, pop it out of the dock, take it on the go. Breath of the Wild, you know, wherever you want to play it or on the big screen. You know, and I think that's Nintendo, you know, Nintendo's big thing on hardware has never been specs, right? It's always been about innovation, right? Whether it's something that works like the Wii with its motion controls, or sort of the half step between the Wii and the Switch, which was the Wii U, which was like, you're not tethered, except you are just a bit, you know, which maybe didn't really work. You know, I think that's where Nintendo comes in with hardware, right? They try to do something different, since they're not interested in competing on a, you know, again, that pro gamer. I really don't like that term, you know, but the Nintendo's not interested in 8K and 120 frames per second. They're just not, right? I think it's because Nintendo, you know, we think of Sony and Xbox, really, Sony and Microsoft as technology companies, but Nintendo's a toy company, right? It's games first with Nintendo. And actually, Matt, I don't know if maybe you'd like to take us away and talk a little bit about Nintendo as far as games go. You know, I think there's obviously some debate over, you know, what sort of games Nintendo offers.
All right, first, I will definitely do that, but first off, I just want to say, hearing all these people talking about two consoles, like, oh, let's just get two. Man, I had to share a Sega Game Gear with my sister for like 5 years, and that's all we got to share. So, all this talk about two consoles, yeah, no worries about that. I'm like, man, really?
And we had to share the rock.
And I mean, but also, but see, more practically, two consoles might seem nice, but it's hard to actually, for a lot of people, that's still not that feasible.
For
in
sure.
Truth, for a lot of people, especially during this time, which I want to say, like, my piece for hardware is, like, I do like how the regular Switch, even though it's a bit more expensive than like the purely mobile version, like, it's comes fully capable of two people being able to play on it at the same time, like the two little, they're not nunchucks anymore, are they? Like the little,
they call them Joy-Cons.
The Joy-Cons. I know, for me personally, whenever I, like, well, it's not going to happen this year probably, but like during Christmas time, it's always a family tradition between me and my cousins that we play Super Smash Brothers. And so now it's easier than ever. I just bring my Switch and we just each grab a Joy-Con and we can face off on each other without no messy wire setups, no have to like charge like controllers or whatever. It's perfect for a portable kind of thing.
You don't even need the TV, right?
You don't even need the TV. Just prop it up, and you got it. But actually, that actually transitioned nicely to games. Nintendo is kind of has always kind of been something for everyone, but I think everyone now does include a bit more of the hardcore crowd. Like case in point, Super Smash Brothers is something that is aimed for, I guess, everybody, like it originally was. It's a part, like a game for everybody can play, like four people at once. But also, it's as much as they feel like they want to deny it, especially with recent news. There is a hardcore fan base for Super Smash Brothers, and there has been some catering to them. Like Nintendo has given bits of catering to the hardcore crowd, especially in like DLC characters and different options on how to play more competitively. And even beyond like Super Smash Brothers, you have games like Fire Emblem Three Houses, which is one of the more storied franchises in Nintendo, and has relatively recently kicked off in the West. And so this kind of like hardcore strategy game, which is accessible by a lot of people, but also has that hardcore permadeath mechanics that you could choose as well for for players that want to do that kind of thing.
Permadeath all the way, man.
Yeah, so Nintendo is definitely has, I would say, it has something for everyone, but it's not going to have the games that, if you're looking for specific games, like Call of Duty or like even like some things like Street Fighter or anything like that, those would lean more to PlayStation and Xbox. Nintendo does cater to a hardcore crowd, but it's a hardcore crowd that's hardcore specifically for Nintendo games. And if you're into that kind of thing, definitely a Switch is the best option, and there's plenty of ways to get your practice in or just play more. But if you're looking for something specific, like Call of Duty or even like Street Fighter or Tekken or games like that are more like esports oriented, then that you'll have to look elsewhere for that. But if you're the kind of like the hardcore player that's like hardcore Nintendo and you love what they offer, and there's plenty that they do offer, then the Switch is definitely the console for you.
Well said. So before we move on, is there anything we missed? Kareem, Al, what do you think?
I don't think there's anything that we missed. I think the only item that I probably left out when talking about the console was cost. But it is something that we covered. But I would say also on my end, and that's kind of what makes, I think, buying two a little bit more reasonable, is that I think they're priced, you know, at a good price point that could make it makes sense that if you need to, you can afford to get to. And when we talk about next gen, we could go into why you won't, even if my daughter wants a PS5 of her own, I can tell you why she won't be getting one.
All right, then let's switch gears a little bit and let's go to, I don't know, I guess we call it the newest console, although Microsoft's, you know, the newest console in the game, right? But Microsoft's been around now for a long time. And with this generation, they've released two consoles, the Xbox Series X and the Xbox Series S. And I'd love to maybe, Kareem, if I toss it over to you, to kind of just get us started. I think you have some interesting feelings on the two consoles.
Sure. So I mentioned earlier that I lean a little bit more towards PlayStation, but I do also like Microsoft and Xbox. I had an original Xbox, and I loved playing Halo. And it's one of the main reasons why I continue to purchase Microsoft consoles. Halo, Gears of War, some of those are my favorite games to play. So when, you know, next gen consoles were announced, before Microsoft announced the Xbox Series X first, right? And everyone figured that there would be a digital version or slim or something of that nature, later announced. But I think what no one was anticipating was that you would get this extremely small console for such a competitive price. So when Microsoft announced that the Xbox Series S was coming out at $299, that was the perfect option for me. It was an upgrade to my Xbox One X. It allowed me to continue to play Microsoft games. Xbox Game Pass is worth every single dollar, and that being available on there all just made sense to me. But I wasn't all for, you know, I knew in my mind that I was going to pre-order a PS5 anyway. So when it came to the, I guess, quote unquote, power of the consoles, it wasn't a major deal for me that some of the graphics related to the console were less than. Or considered less than, depending on how you look at it. So having the console and having played with it now for a little over a week, it is, I think, surprisingly, it is an extremely good buy. If you're a little bit on the fence on spending $500 on a next-gen console, the Xbox Series S is definitely the console for you. I'm extremely happy with the purchase. I can talk a little bit, later about kind of the features and how it plays and so forth. But I've been pleasantly surprised with the console. It gets a lot of, I think when you go online and you look at the reviews, it takes a lot of a beating up when it comes to the storage, which I will tell you, it does fill up extremely quickly. I probably have 6 games on the internal hard drive, and I'm sitting at like 60% of it already full. But moving games from your external hard drive to the console, it takes, if it's even 3 minutes, that's like saying a lot. So it is really nothing to just move a game from your external hard drive to the console itself, so you can get that experience of the next gen speed. It's a very, very nice console. And I think that's the console that is going to be the real, I think it's going to sell a lot more than people expect it to.
Yeah. And if somebody wants to bounce off of that, go for it. I think, to me, the Series S is like the surprise here. When I think of particularly what Xbox and PlayStation are offering, right, which is this sort of, this 4K gaming experience, high frame rates, to release a console that's specifically for the people who don't care. Right. Or not don't care. But yeah, the people who that's just not as important to. Is a really bold move. And I think it's like bold move, like Nintendo sort of bold, you know what I mean? Saying like, we've got good games, we've got stuff that'll really speak for itself. So let's release a console that doesn't need all that extra, all the extra frame rate and the high resolution hardware. But yeah, someone tell me I'm wrong.
I don't know, James. I don't think you're necessarily wrong, but I don't know if that equates out to it being like the best bang for your buck out of all of this, if that's what we're talking about. Like in comparison to its two other contemporaries, like you have something that's significantly cheaper with a much larger library, and then you have Sony, which we haven't talked about yet, and I don't want to get into, but at the very least, I mean, you could say it's been here longer, but how much of an argument is that anymore anyway, considering I didn't expect us to still have these three competitors this long into the game? I expected someone to fall off or someone else to come in at this point. I didn't expect the status quo to be to still be the same than when I was a teenager, is what I'm trying to get at. And consistently, it does feel like more so than Sony that Microsoft isn't as invested in the success of these products as necessarily Sony or even Nintendo are. Nintendo, this is their lifeblood. This is what they're at. Sony feels like it has sort of its market, a large part of its market built up into this. Microsoft still feels like this is a cool side project we did that one time. And, oh, look, it's still going. Isn't that cute?
I guess, but as far as side projects go, I think it's a relatively successful one. Let's talk quickly. Let me talk a little bit about game library then, right? This is the only version by the definition of what we have for backwards compatibility, right? Microsoft, because of Game Pass, because of its expansive online library of games, it's probably got the largest, pick up and go day one sort of offerings for you. Right. You can't download a digital PS3 game on the PS5. Right. But if you're new to the game, if you're new to home consoles and you get, say an Xbox Series S, you've got a massive library all the way from original Xbox to now. I mean, I don't know about you, but that's not a small investment by Microsoft into this sort of area of expertise.
Yeah, let me jump in with that. The backwards compatibility, I think, is an absolute deal maker for me, or one of the absolute big deal makers for me for the Xbox, for the fact that, like, I still have my original Xbox games, and my Xbox 360 games, and a lot of them do fall under the backwards compatibility. Even if it's not every game, it's a hell of a lot more than what Sony is offering. And the fact that I can put in some of my, like, OG Xbox stuff, which is important, which is big for me, because the original Xbox was my very first self-purchased console.
Yep.
So it does like hold a special place in my heart. And so being able to play that is really cool. And also 360, being able to play with that, like, that was, like, I think probably one of my next biggest, like, console self purchases. That's very big for me. And yeah, also, as was mentioned before, Xbox Game Pass, it's a huge value to it. Much better than, like, what PlayStation Plus is offering, I feel. And it's those combinations is like, if you're looking for games to play, like, a variety of games, old and new, Xbox feels like it's the one to beat, in all honesty, just for sheer volume of it, of choice.
I think it's funny too, because I feel like that was such, at least for me, it's been such a trade-off back and forth, you know, like, I was a Wii 360 because of the price of the PS3 originally, right? Mm-hmm. And then for the Xbox One, it just felt so much more like a media center. Like, it wasn't aiming to be a gaming system, you know? So for that generation, you know, and because of price compatibility and all of the kind of bold moves Xbox made at the time that were just a little bit ahead of the curve, you know, it ended up being, you know, it ended up being PS4, you know, PS4/Wii U, I guess, you know, but now it's kind of like, you know, the PS5 looks great, but, you know, as Kareem said, and I'm going to toss it hopefully back over to you, Kareem, to talk a little bit about the differences between the two. But, you know, I could see owning, you know, an Xbox and a Series S and a PlayStation 5. You know what I mean? Like, it just seems like a doable thing. But the Series X is their heavy hitter, right?
Yeah. And I think you said it perfectly, James. Like, if you're, for me, having the Series S and the PS5 is, like, the perfect combination for me. Right, I'm not a huge Microsoft gamer, but I have access to over 100 games with Game Pass, and I like playing some of the older games. I was just playing Fable 2 not too long ago, and I was pleasantly.
I'm so sorry for you.
I mean, I played it before and I beat it. I just wanted to play it again, but I was pleasantly surprised to see that it's been upgraded. Like, I can clearly see that the frame rates have increased. The resolutions are a lot better, and it's nice to go back to an older game and see that, like, it's even getting optimized on a next gen console. So to your point, yeah, Microsoft is investing a lot in their games and the experience that the gamers are having. Now, you know, with that said, yes, the Xbox Series X is the big console, right? The big powerful console being marketed as the most powerful console on the market. Which is great. That's fine. I think we all can agree that the amount of teraflops and what that really means is somewhat debatable. But I think the real experience you're getting is in the SSDs, right? And I can tell you that the Xbox Series S and the PS5, loading them up is lightning fast. The Series S, I actually think the Series S is just slightly faster than my PS5 from when I press the on button. I can literally be in a video game in less than a minute on my Xbox Series S. I probably could put it at about 30 seconds.
Well, the Series X and S both have that sort of in-game quick stop feature that you can use on multiple games.
Correct.
So you can like, you can literally be at the exact moment of the game you were at before, which is just mind boggling.
Yeah, it is a, it's the quick resume feature, and I've tried it. I've loaded up four different games, I started playing them all and just left them, right? Just so I can see what it would be like if I could just come back into the game exactly where I left off. And it works extremely well. It is, once you've experienced that feature, it's hard to not have it, right? And I guess that works really well for me too, because on the Xbox, I play multiple games. Like I jump from a Halo to a Fable to a Gears Tactics to Streets of Rage 4, right? That's just like how I play on my Xbox. On Sony, it's different, right? I'm playing like The Last of Us, or I'm playing God of War, right? And I'm really invested into that one game. So it works for me that the quick resume multiple game feature doesn't, it's not on the PlayStation, but it doesn't change the fact that the console is still extremely powerful and extremely fast. I mean, it is that to me, it's, once you experience it, it's hard to even go back to a loading, to see a loading screen for more than 25 seconds. It's going to be like, it's going to be a horrible experience for you after you've gone through not experiencing it. I, my daughter has the One X in her room. And when she asks me to like find a game for her, and I'm like, oh my God, this is taking so long. I'm probably talking about 45 seconds to a minute here. But after experiencing it on the Series S and the PS5, it feels that long. The days of you checking your Twitter and your Instagram account while you're waiting on a loading screen are over. You will die. You'll wake up to a headshot if you even look at your phone while you're playing a game.
I did like, there was a great tweet that said like, you know, the PlayStation 5 and Xbox Series X have killed my doom scrolling because nothing has to load anymore.
Yeah, it's true. You will. I was playing Red Dead Redemption 2, which has extremely long loading screens on the last gen consoles. And I started playing it and I got up to go, like, I don't know, do something. And when I came back, I saw that my, like, I had loaded back into like my camp because I had died while I was outside of the room or whatever, because the game had loaded up so quickly. It's really awesome. It is an awesome experience.
So Al, I feel like you might be the most sour on the Xbox here, but you also have talked the least about it. So I want to toss it over to you to do our finish up, our kind of wrap up of this, you know, and see if anyone else has any thoughts we might have missed.
I'm actually not as sour as you would think I might have been, because I was, one of the things I wanted to say was actually like, you can't undersell that backwards compatibility. Like, besides just what Matt had alluded to earlier, which is just starting the console up with a bunch of games you can just already go look back and forth on, I think the unfortunate reality of hardware just slowly over time just dying, and they're not making new Xboxes, they're not making new 360s. Having that backwards compatibility is vital to continuing to enjoy or being able to play the media that came from before.
Then let's move on to, I think, the one that sounds like it's closest and most dear to all our hearts. Matt, would you like to start us off on the PS5?
Ooh, all right. So for the previous console generation, I was firmly a PlayStation 4 person, just in terms of hardware, just kind of like feature offerings. I kind of poo-pooed on it before, but I do like PlayStation Plus. The two free games is kind of nice, and like it does have some nice discounts, and also being able to play online, it works solid enough. Initially, when the consoles were first announced, I originally started with like, okay, I'll definitely purchase a PS5 just because it has the exclusives I like, and I might as well just, when I purchase a console, I kind of choose it for the exclusives at this point. Until I found out about like the backwards compatibility stuff for the Xbox. But I must admit that the big appeal of the PS5, even though like the Xbox Series S/X has a big library, I'm kind of like looking to see what in the future holds for games for new releases. And I mean, for PS5, the biggest game changer for me was, I think, like a month and change ago, they were having like kind of like an online event, and the first video they showed was Final Fantasy 16, and it was like PlayStation timed exclusive, and it was like, crap. That's kind of a big deal for me when it comes to a console, and I feel like it's definitely going to be kind of a big war going on, is like what get the big console exclusives, since like we talk about like hardware and stuff, but we are rapidly approaching the point where hardware is becoming super blurred, and I do believe that the big difference maker now is the games that you can play, and so like the Xbox obviously has like the backwards compatibility. But if PlayStation has all the upcoming exclusives, that's a tough decision for me. And if PlayStation picks up some big exclusive like Final Fantasy 16, like that caliber, then that it's gonna be hard to ignore that.
I mean, I think that's always where my heart's at. You know, is the games I like, you know, and Kareem said it before, you know, Resident Evil's on the PS, you know, I'm on the, you know, Final Fantasy, Kingdom Hearts, The Last of Us, you know, Horizon. These are all games like I super want to play. Al, I think you're chomping at the bit. You got something for us.
As weird as this is going to sound, I have to actually like have some contention with where we're rapidly approaching the idea that like hardware and graphics don't matter as much, because we've thought that before. And this is where I think my taste in retrospection actually comes in a bit handy, is that it's weird to go back now and sort of look at the games from the Xbox 360, the PS3 era, because there are definitely a lot of things on the 360 that don't quite hold up as well as the PS3 does, that were negligible at the time, like pop-in graphics and such. Like, there's something about, like, not that I'm a huge tech nerd or something like that, I'm not in any way, but looking at the games and then hearing the explanation now that people have had time to dig through these consoles and almost literally take them apart and build them from scratch, there's a lot that's different and a lot that matters more when time goes by, and we're actually more like, I'm trying to think of what the word is, we scrutinize these things harder when they're that much older. And I don't know when or how that started, because it used to be like, it looks like crap, it doesn't matter, it's from 30 years ago, ha 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 ha. But something about the PS3 onwards, looking back, that it still held to this very weird standard, because graphics haven't necessarily changed as much as they have since Super Nintendo. Like, you put a Super Nintendo game up against the PS5 game, they look, you know, vastly different. And to an extent, you can pull that off with a PS2 versus a PS5. But PS3... versus PS5, yeah, you can tell there's a difference, but graphics haven't come so far from that that point that it's forgivable, that we don't notice the seams as much, that it's excusable for something of its time. So I think that as much as we say, oh, well, this doesn't really matter now, it's gonna matter later.
I mean, like, I'm talking, like, scientifically, we're reaching the point where things are getting blurred. Like, which is why, like, the graphics card industry is kind of, like, reaching to a point.
What I'm hearing from Al is it's a point of diminishing returns until the Xbox literally can come out of the television and sit next to him on the couch.
I mean, it's unfortunate, but true.
you know, we didn't really talk about VR compatibility here, but, you know, obviously the PlayStation has some investment in that, which is a potential next future. But let's, why don't I toss this to Kareem? He's the only man here who's got the playtime with the hardware. So I think this is a good time for you to jump in. Is it all that it's cracked up to be?
I have to say that it is all it's cracked up to be. And then some. I will throw that in there as well. And just to kind of to touch upon the graphics and kind of it matters and it doesn't matter. To be honest, I think there was a point where we were all like when the PS4 and the Xbox One came out, and it was said that, you know, PS4 1080p all the way. Right. And then Xbox One was like, well, not so much 1080p, maybe 720. But, you know, we'll figure it out. Right. Everyone was in an uproar. What do you mean 1080? Not 1080. You crazy? You know, today, I think if you look at, you know, look at, let's, I can take the Series S and the PS5 and go ahead and compare that. Right. The Series S upscales to 4K. It natively comes out at, what, 1440, and the PS5 natively comes out at 4K. And as James mentioned early on, like, I was in audiovisual production too, so I'm a little sensitive to how things look on screen, and I can tell you that they both look amazing. Now, if the consoles, now what really does catch my attention are frame rates. Now, if Xbox, Microsoft came out and said, yeah, we're only doing 30 frame rates per second, and that's it, then I'd have a serious concern there, right? If, you know, the frame rates is kind of what really smooths it out, makes it run really, really well. And I think that's kind of where we're approaching. PS5, Sony has already come out and said, yeah, we're going to be able to send out a patch that's going to allow you to do 8K. I don't care. At this point, like, I don't care. Because I'm not going to buy a TV that does 8K. Not right now, anyway, and not probably in the near future either. But I do care. I do care about frame rate. So that's important. But I digress. Having had my hands on the PS5, I think the big, and James and I talked about this earlier too, I think what's not getting enough attention is the controller on the PS5. Is it revolutionary? I don't think so, but it is very, very fun. The haptic feedback, the differences that you feel when you're playing a game versus walking on sand versus swimming in water, or playing a first-person shooter where you can feel the resistance in the triggers. It's harder to pull or quicker. It's been a lot of fun playing games with that controller. I mean, I love swinging through the city in Spider-Man Miles Morales, which looks amazing. And I can compare that to the PS4 Spider-Man, which I also played on the PS5. The console is the whole package. I mean, it's lightning fast. The controller is super responsive, comfortable, and fun with the haptic feedback and the, you know, the resistance that you feel on the triggers. The games are obviously very, very important. Like Matt mentioned, you know, I need God of War. Like, I need to play that game. Like, the Sony, during that big conference where they announced Final Fantasy 16, all they did was play the background music of God of War with a logo, and not even gave us a year that we may see the game, right? That's enough for me to say I'm buying the console, right? Don't even know when it's coming out. That's enough, right? God of War is just a must-have for me, especially after the PS4's God of War. Horizon Zero Dawn, it's going to be available on the PS4 when it launches, but I need to play it in all its glory on the PS5. It's just a must for me. The game deserves to be played on the PS5. And that's a real important, that's a real important item when it comes to the PS5. It just has those console exclusives that pull it just slightly over the finish line, I think, with Microsoft. Don't get me wrong. Microsoft has a lot of games and a lot of fun, but a lot of them I can play on PS5. There are some that I can't, which is why I got a Series S, which was, you know, worth it for me, that I can play those games when they eventually become available. But it's not going to be that many of the exclusives that I'm going to have to wait for on the Series S. You know, PS5 has that deal with Hideo Kojima, right? I don't know what he's got working on next, but I just know I need it. You know, that's all I know. You know, Death Stranding. I've beaten Death Stranding twice. Ask me what that game is about. I can't even tell you. I have no idea. But I know I enjoyed it, and I know everything that Hideo Kojima puts his hands on, I want to play it. So the PS5 is definitely the total package. I love it. You know, I like to say every now and then that I treat my Sony consoles like my wife, and I treat my Microsoft consoles like the mistress.
So what? I have one little nitpick about the PlayStation hardware, and then I want to ask, you know, from the group what we missed. I think my only nitpick is Sony feels like they're doing a little bit of that PlayStation 3 ahead of the curve thing here. I'll specifically reference this in the SSD area, right? So Sony's games are massive, right? They're using, you know, like double-sized Blu-ray discs. You know, the digital edition only has so much memory. And while it's great that they're allowing you to update your hard drives, right, that's only going to be coming in a future patch. And they're using, you know, motherboard stick hard drives as compared to, you know, as compared to the traditional SSDs we're used to. Certainly they're faster, but they're expensive. And Sony's saying that you'll only be able to use PlayStation certified ones. So, well, it's great that Sony is kind of planning for its own longevity here, you know, to release a console that, you know, and again, like you said, with the 8K, you know, that's kind of is going to rely on future updates to keep its hardware relevant, or to unlock functionalities of its hardware, feels both good and bad in a way that maybe concerns me. And I think that's my only big nitpick, you know, outside of the, yes, I also want to play all those exclusives. All right. Well, then I have one last question to seal us up. And we're just going to go right down the line. If you had to pick one, right? You just magically, somebody says you can get one of these, all the consoles we talked about, but you only get one. You can't get another one. You're just going to be stuck with that until, you know, the PS26 comes out. What is it? Matt, I'm going to start with you.
Oh, my gosh. On the spot.
Yeah, go for it.
I do want to say before we get into that, before we get into, like, which one you got to get, I just for the audience, as a reminder, we do live in a pandemic time, and I know funds are very tough. And so, like, our recommendations aren't us at all ever saying, yes, you need to get this, like, right now. Obviously, there's a lot of things that are more important than your fun video game console box. And while it's cool to think about this, like getting it maybe eventually down the line, like we here at Nonproductive fully understand that this world that we live in is very crazy, and there's a lot of things to consider first before video games. With that being said, though, if I had to pick one, I think currently at the moment, if I had the choice, I would say PlayStation 5, just because the console exclusives, for now, just seem too good for PlayStation 5. I mean, we mentioned God of War, Final Fantasy, The Last of Us, lots of the big hitters that I'm interested in, seem to be at least leaning towards or will probably be PlayStation exclusive. So if I got the pick now, definitely PS5 just for the games that are coming. If worse comes to worse, if I want to play an Xbox 360 game, I still have my 360 somewhere. I'll just dig that out. PS5. Final answer.
This is a really tough question, but it's also kind of not, because I think I know what the answer is, and the answer is just going to be the Switch. Mainly for Breath of the Skyrim. I just feel like that's a game I've let go for too long. I haven't been able to pick it up. And gosh darn, guys, like, Skyrim was such a great game, right? I mean, it'd be a shame to miss the sequel. So I'm definitely in on that.
All right, Kareem, where are you standing?
Without question, PlayStation 5.
You don't even have, like, you just mic dropped. You don't even have any explanation.
I mean, I guess I'm able to experience both, and I can think about what it would be like if I didn't have one of them. So I would definitely be sad if I did not have the PlayStation 5. And, you know, I haven't even shared what my evening was like trying to pre-order that console. I can tell you that I put 90% less effort into pre-ordering the Xbox Series S. So definitely I'm very happy with the PS5. If I had nothing else and I had to just live with this one, I'd be super satisfied with it. PS5.
I think I'm going to be the weird standout here. I'm going to say the Series S. I think just its available game catalog alone, you know, I don't get to play games as much as I used to, and I see myself kind of drawn to old favorites or things I maybe just didn't get to last time around, as compared to making a huge new investment in a new series or you know, a big new game, just because I don't have the time, you know, and the dedication. So sometimes, like, why even try? Maybe that's a too sour of a tone, but yeah, I don't know. I think based on its price point, you know, combined with that Game Pass and that available catalog of games, and the only console that really totes true backwards compatibility, something that used to be so important to gamers that seems to have, like, fallen a little bit by the wayside. Yeah, I just think the Series S is, you know, Kareem, you said it in post-production, it's the surprise console. It's I think it's the oddball favorite, and I'm excited about it.
Fair enough. I think you'll be sad.
All right. Well, I think that's all the time we have for today. You know, it has been great to talk about some video games. I think it was long overdue for all of us. You know, everybody remember to check out Matt's game streams every Friday night over at the Nonproductive Twitch channel. You know, check out Al's Gaming Emporium if you want some classic games. Kareem, do you have anything you're doing right now that you want to promote?
If you are in the events industry, please check out New York, New York's chapter of the International Association of Exhibitions and Events. We are all going through a tough and challenging time, but that chapter is here to help any way that we can. So if you can, check us out. I'm happy to have a conversation and discuss any of your needs.
Awesome. That's great. Yeah, the events industry is really hurting. As you know, as Matt said, this pandemic time, as so many industries are, you know, it's difficult to adapt in this, you know, new and challenging era. So we really do, you know, appreciate all the work that everybody's putting into that. Well, thank you, everybody. I think we're going to sign off. It's been wonderful. Bye now.
Bye.
Good night, everybody.
This has been a Nonproductive Media presentation. Executive Producer Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Nonproductive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives License. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.